Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tonight on The Readout.
He said more people voted in Philadelphia than there were voters. And that was absolute rubbish.
And I said something to the effect of, sir, we've done dozens of investigations, hundreds of interviews. The major allegations are not supported by the evidence developed.
Lie, cheat, and steal. Testimony today at the second January 6th hearing reveals that Trump knew he lost, but tried to steal the election anyway, while cheating his MAGA supporters out of their hard-earned money. Plus, some are calling the gun reform framework a good first step. That suggests more is coming. Color me skeptical. We'll talk about all of that and more with Karine Jean-Pierre in her first live primetime interview since she made history, becoming the new White House press secretary. But we begin with day two of public hearings by the House January 6th committee. Today, showing how Donald Trump deliberately launched the big lie to convince his own voters that he won an election he lost, using claims of non-existent fraud, and then seeking to corrupt the Justice Department, his own campaign team, his donors, and our court system in an effort to cling to power. And if you think he cooked up that plan after the election as a Hail Mary because he simply couldn't accept defeat, understand that Donald Trump went into the election already planning to lie about the outcome, having laid the groundwork for months.
Mail ballots are a very dangerous thing for this country because they're cheaters.
When you do all mail-in voting ballots, you're asking for fraud.
The only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged. Remember that.
I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster. Get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen.
And then on election night, despite being told by numerous advisors, all diehard Republicans, whose testimony we heard, that it was too early to declare victory since votes were still being counted and the predicted outcome, frankly, didn't look favorable for him, Trump did it anyway, falsely claiming that the election was stolen. Today, we learned more about who was advising him to make that claim from former campaign advisor Jason Miller, including this revelation about that individual's condition at the time.
Mayor was definitely intoxicated, but I do not know his level of intoxication when he spoke with the president, for example. Effectively, Mayor Giuliani was saying, we want it. They're stealing it from us. Where'd all the votes come from? We need to go say that we won. And essentially that anyone who didn't agree with that position was being weak.
An attorney for Rudy Giuliani denied he was drinking that night, but we heard Giuliani on tape telling the committee he did speak to the former president several times on election night and in the days that followed. The increasingly farcical claims by Rudy and Trump lawyer Sidney Powell took center stage in the former president's mind, despite being told the truth by basically everybody else, from his numbers guys to his campaign manager, Bill Stepien, and his own White House lawyers.
I didn't mind being categorized. There were two groups of them. We called them kind of my team and Rudy's team. I didn't mind being characterized as being part of Team Normal, as reporters, you know, kind of started to do around that point in time. I didn't think what was happening was necessarily honest or professional at that point in time.
What they were proposing, I thought was nuts. You know, the theory was also completely nuts.
Even his extravagantly loyal attorney general, William Barr, told Trump that there was no fraud, specifically adding that false claims about Dominion voting systems, which have since gotten Giuliani and Powell sued, were ludicrous.
I told him that the stuff that his people were shoveling out to the public was bull. I mean, that the claims of fraud were bull. I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact with he's become detached from reality. if he really believes this stuff. When I went into this and would, you know, tell him how crazy some of these allegations were, there was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
In fact, Trump's claims in the immediate aftermath of the election were so bizarre. Former Fox News political editor Chris Steyerwald put it this way.
After the election, as of November 7th, in your judgment, what were the chances of President Trump winning the election?
After that point?
Yes.
None. The idea that through any normal process in any of these states, remember, he had to do it thrice, right? He needed three of these states to change. And in order to do that, I mean, you're better off to play the Powerball.
Despite knowing full well that his claims were a lie, Trump still began marketing the snake oil of a stolen election, starting from his first post-election interview, an interview Bill Barr referenced in his testimony.
Everybody said, this is over. I'm telling you, at 10 o'clock, everybody thought it was over. And then the phone, right. Then the phony mail-in started coming in, Maria. But just so you understand, I got 74 million votes. It was over. And then mail-in started happening. Glitches started happening. This election was rigged. This election is a total fraud.
Now, after months of those lies, by January 6th, the train had left the station. And millions of Trump supporters had been infected by the big lie, with a mob primed and ready to march on the Capitol.
200,000 people that weren't even registered voted. 430,000 votes disappeared from President Trump's tally. And you can't stand there and tell me that it worked.
I don't want to say that what we're doing is right. But if the election is being stolen, what is it going to take?
Joining me now is Yamiche Alcindor, anchor and moderator of Washington Week on PBS and an MSNBC Washington correspondent. Jill Weinbanks, former assistant Watergate special prosecutor and an MSNBC legal analyst. And Kurt Bardella, advisor to the DNC and the DCCC. Thank you all for being here, Yamiche. I want to start with you. You know, we did hear today, at least that Merrick Garland has stated that his prosecutors are watching. They are paying attention to what's going on. My question is, how much of Capitol Hill, particularly Capitol Hill Republicans, are paying attention to this? We know Fox News actually did carry this today. And we know that's what plays in their TVs, in their offices. If significant numbers of Republicans were watching, what's been the reaction?
Well, from my conversations with Republicans today, people are watching. This was really a black box being opened into the White House with people really hearing from the people that were closest to President Trump, who were warning him that his lie could not metastasize, and then watching it metastasize. And you also heard from people this shrinking inner circle that basically said, I can no longer be part of this. So I was texting with one Trump aide in particular who had literally traveled to different states trying to convince people that the election had been rigged. Today he told me that this really looked like President Trump was, quote, extremely culpable. And also it made him seem as though he's someone who is now chasing a fool's dream, that anybody who's going down this road with President Trump is continuing to really just believe in things that are not going to be happen at all, and that it's actually pretty dangerous. I also want to note really quickly that this was also a fundraising aspect of this. President Trump has become a fundraising giant. So a lot of the Republicans I talked to pointed out that this is still politically viable for President Trump and the people who are sticking with him to support this lie. That being said, there are a lot of lies, but I don't know if that there are going to be a lot of minds change joy.
Of course, because they're also using it as an excuse to pass restrictive voting laws. The big lie has been helpful for all Republicans up and down the aisle, or up and down the ballot. But Jill Weinbanks, the other thing, and I think that's very important to note here, and we sort of got into that a little bit in the open, is that it's not as if Trump suddenly woke up after the November 3rd election and started to believe the big lie. He was already setting up to do the big lie. And in fact, it's his history, right? It's what he does. He says that any election where he doesn't like the outcome is stolen. He claimed that, you know, it was undocumented immigrants who elected Barack Obama. That wasn't real. With Hillary Clinton, he was already setting up to say that this election was going to be stolen. He even said that the election in Iowa when he lost to Ted Cruz was stolen. He said Ted Cruz, that was stolen. That was fraud. So it is a pattern. So there's no way that any Republican or anybody other than, I guess, his voters could say that this was something new, right?
You cannot say it's something new. And I think what was shown today was very compelling evidence that proves that he knew that it was a big lie. He knew the truth, and he can't use his lack of knowledge as a defense in this case. The jury, if there were a criminal case, would be instructed that willful ignorance of the facts is not a defense. And especially when the only person or persons who were giving him the information that it was okay, that he hadn't lost, was an inebriated Rudy Giuliani and Kraken lawyer Sidney Powell, whereas everybody else from his campaign, his attorney general, all of the people that were surrounding him who had a reason to be advising him, who were actual employees, all said, you lost and there is no fraud. So it's not a defense. And that's very important what they did today.
And you know, Kurt, you know, listen, Donald Trump was not listening to the people who were tippling on the ripple, allegedly, because he had no choice and he was desperate. He was doing it because he wanted to, right? I mean, you go through, let's go to Bill Stepien. Because I think this was his testimony to me was very important, because he came into the campaign when they were already worried they were going to lose. They already had problems. He wasn't the original campaign manager. Here's what he said today.
I inherited a campaign that was, the day I was hired, was, I believe, President Trump's low point in the 2020 daily average polling against President Biden. It was a campaign at a low point in the polls. It was structurally and fiscally deficient. There was a great deal wrong with the campaign in both of those areas. Most of my time was spent fixing the things that could be fixed.
And by the way, this is also the same campaign manager, Kurt, and you and I both are very familiar with campaigns, who told me it would be a bad idea to downplay and to get his voters to hate mail-in balloting, because usually mail-in balloting is good for Republicans. So he sort of dug his own grave by doing that. Your thoughts on the way that this played out today and what we learned?
Well, I think that the key headline here is that the big lie was nothing but exaggerated clickbait nonsense designed to drive up profit and donations for Donald Trump to grifting his own supporters. The last thing that we saw in this hearing today, when Zoe Lofgren articulated what the committee had found in terms of where the money went that they raised, $250 million, and that none of it went to any kind of election defense fund or any type of voter fraud investigative unit, it tells us that the motive of all of this from day one, the minute that the polls closed in November of 2020, was making money from his supporters, was grifting the diehard Trumpers, the same way that Steve Bannon grifted his supporters through that Build the Wall fund that was never used for anything like that, that was ultimately found to be a crime. That's what this was all about, that Donald Trump profited from the big lie, that everything that we saw from listening to drunk Giuliani to ignoring all of his advisors, to ignoring the attorney general, was all about grifting, keeping the grift going forward. And, it's mind-numbing to me, Joy, that even now, all this time removed from the election, there are still Republicans who are bending over backwards to try to get this guy's support, following his lead, keeping him at the top of the Republican Party, despite all the things that we know. Watching these proceedings, for any Republicans out there that still follows this guy, you're following drunk Rudy at the same time. Just keep that in mind.
Well, and including Bill, let's not leave out Bill Barr. I have to say this. I'll go to you on this, Joe. William Barr is attempting to sort of do a great laundry deal here. He did testify under oath. That's good. He's telling the truth and that he told Trump the truth. He did an AP interview in which he said, no, I told him that this was all hunk boat. It was crazy. It's not true. It was crazy stuff. It was BS. This is what he was saying before the election about mail-in balloting.
The mailing out universally of ballots, what I've said is that opens the floodgate to potential fraud and coercion.
We're a very closely divided country here. And if people have to have confidence in the results of the election and the legitimacy of the government, and people trying to change the rules to this methodology, which as a matter of logic is very open to fraud and coercion.
You know, liberals project, you know, the president is going to stay in office and right. Seize power and all that.
Fascism.
I've never heard of that crap. Right. I mean, I'm the attorney general.
This is the irony, Jill. I mean, this is the guy who lied about the Mueller report, who did a fake investigation that's still actually going on about the origins of the Russiagate investigation, attack voting by mail, called COVID lockdowns the greatest intrusion on civil liberties in American history, promoted the theory of the deep state. I could go on, but we don't have the time. Jill Winebanks, what do you make of the idea that he then becomes the number one witness so far as used by the committee against his former boss, Donald Trump?
I'm very happy that he's telling the truth now. I think he owed it to the country to tell the truth when it mattered, when there was an impeachment going on, when something could have been done that would have barred Donald Trump from ever running for office again. So while I applaud his doing it now, I can't applaud him or hold him to any high standard because he failed. And he didn't do his duty as a public servant. He was obligated to do that. So better late than never, I guess. But and again, it would have been even more powerful if he had testified in person. I would like to see more live testimony because I know from the Watergate trial that a live witness just has much more impact on a jury than recordings. Even the recordings of the president saying, committing crimes on tape is not as effective as hearing a witness say, this is what I heard, this is what I did.
Yeah.
So we need more of that.
And very quickly, Yamiche, I mean, this was Republicans against Republicans. They can't, no one on Capitol Hill could possibly be saying this was partisan attacks on Trump, right?
Well, of course, Kevin McCarthy is saying that. But at the end of the day, you have a bipartisan group of lawmakers saying that President Trump did something that no other U.S. president in history has done, and that is to try to subvert the Constitution and stay in power unlawfully. And I have to also note that President Trump put out this 12-page statement tonight talking about the fact that this hearing is made up and this committee is unfair. That tells you that he's watching. That tells you that he is sitting and stewing because he realizes that the people that were closest to him are now on live TV with millions of people watching, saying that he was lying and that they told him he was lying. And that, in fact, he decided to listen to a drunk Rudy Giuliani over people who had been doing this for decades and were looking at the data.
Where do you put that on? Truth Social? Kurt Bardella, last note here. It wasn't bipartisan. It was Republicans. These are Republicans, hardcore MAGA. Bill Stepien is right now working to unseat Liz Cheney when he's off paternity leave. Really quick, last thought.
From day one, the number one witness, the star of these proceedings, were always going to be the Republicans who testified,
that's right,
Republicans who gave depositions, Republicans in their own words. And that's just the bottom line.
There's no Democrats involved. This was a Republican operation. Yamiche Alcindor, Jill Winebanks, Kurt Bardella, thank you all very much. Up next on The Readout, the big lie was also the big grift. How much money do you think Trump conned out of his supporters, as Kurt mentioned, for an election defense fund that never even existed? I will tell you. And Karine Jean-Pierre is the first black woman and the first openly gay woman to serve as White House press secretary. And there's another first tonight. Her first live primetime interview since getting that important position. And it is right here with me on The Readout. Stay with us.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Donald Trump spread the big lie to cling to power and the presidency, but it was also a grift, preying on the wallets of small dollar MAGA donors. According to the January 6th committee, the Trump campaign sent millions of emails to supporters about how they needed to step up and protect election integrity, raising more than $250 million. And while they claimed that money was going to the official election defense fund, two Trump campaign staffers testified that the fund did not actually exist. Instead, most of the money went to Trump's new super PAC, and some of that money was funneled to the Trump hotel collection. Here's what Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, who took center stage at today's hearing, said about the big grift.
Will also show that the Trump campaign used these false claims of election fraud to raise hundreds of millions of dollars from supporters who were told their donations were for the legal fight in the courts. But the Trump campaign didn't use the money for that. The big lie was also a big ripoff.
Joining me now is Charles Coleman, MSNBC legal analyst and a civil rights attorney, and Angelo Carasone, president and CEO of Media Matters. Thank you both for being here. I want to start with you, Charles. Let me play a woman named Amanda Wick. She's a senior investigative counsel for the House Select Committee, and they produced this clip in which she described the money grift. Take a look.
The Select Committee discovered that the Save America PAC made millions of dollars of contributions to pro-Trump organizations, including $1 million to Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows' charitable foundation, $1 million to the America First Policy Institute, a conservative organization which employs several former Trump administration officials, $204,857 to the Trump Hotel Collection, and over $5 million to Event Strategies, Inc., the company that ran President Trump's January 6th rally on the Ellipse.
So, Charles, they collected all that money, $250 million. Trump Chief of Staff Meadows got a taste. We got a little bit that employed some Trump staffers and got them jobs. Event Strategies, the fundraising company that funded the Ellipse rally. How is any of that legal?
Well, it's not, Joy. And the simple answer is it's important to understand that there are a variety of different audiences that the committee is talking to in terms of these hearings. And obviously, no audience is less important than the Department of Justice. What they're doing here, and I'm speaking as a former prosecutor, is they're trying to give this the results of the hearings as much low-hanging fruit to the DOJ as possible. They want to take away any potential defenses that might scare the DOJ off from a prosecution against Trump. And it's important to understand that sometimes, even though the headline is insurrection, and even though the headline is the Capitol riots, sometimes it's the low-hanging fruit that you end up prosecuting someone on. Al Capone was convicted of tax evasion.
That's right.
In this case, it very well may be the low-hanging fruit of actual felonious fraud that we're seeing unearthed with respect to this money grab, this multi-million dollar money grab that the Trump organization benefited from. And so they're pursuing multiple avenues through what we're finding through the hearings and what's being unearthed that they're basically handing over to the DOJ and showing, number one, not only was there nefarious intent, people stood to make a lot of money after what was going on. And it was very intentional.
And by the way, I mean, Angelo, I mean, Trump's entire presidency was in part a money-making grift. He made money off of everyone who swiped their card at his hotel that he was leasing from the General Services Administration, meaning us, the federal, the taxpayer. He just, you know, the golf stuff. He just constantly made money off being president. But some of what he did also was dangerous. You know, it did foment ultimately insurrection. This is worse than scamming his supporters off Build the Wall, which his buddy Steve Bannon did. Let me play a guy named, his name is Al Schmidt. He was the lone Republican member of the Philadelphia City Commission that was overseeing voting, the vote count in 2020. This is what he said today.
After the president tweeted at me by name, calling me out the way that he did, the threats became much more specific, much more graphic, and included not just me by name, but included members of my family by name, their ages, our address, pictures of our home, just every bit of detail that you could imagine. That was what changed with that tweet.
And those kinds of attacks were amplified by all of right-wing media, not just on Twitter. There's a whole right-wing media ecosphere that you follow that contributed to what turned out to be not just violence on January 6, 2021, but also violent threats toward anyone who stood in the way of Trump staying in office. Your thoughts?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, so you know, the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the seeds of doubt in the election were sown well before the whole Stop the Steal effort, even Election Day. I mean, 6% of Donald Trump's posts in 2020 were about the election being stolen, and almost all of those were before Election Day. And the right-wing media would amplify that concern, just like we heard in the previous segment about Bill Barr, right? Casting doubt on all these, you know, on the mechanisms that were letting people vote. I mean, they were building the foundation for what later became the scaffolding for the attack on January 6th. And I think what you get to is actually the incentive structures that get created here, whether you're identifying a target like Donald Trump did in those tweets, or even talking about the big grift with the $250 million. What you create is our new feedback loops and behaviors. One of the things that I found really disturbing, and the committee didn't bring it up today, but it's relevant, is that not only once you sort of built the muscle memory in for people to raise money off that, one of the things that we saw is a year after the 2020 election, there were still 46 separate organizations and entities, many of which were actually Republican candidates, that were running ads on Facebook targeting people to give them donations, all based on the election being stolen. Right. So you actually create the conditions where others then take the ball and run with it. You build and inspire new feedback loops, either to lie and amplify misinformation, or actually to operationalize that misinformation by targeting individuals, be they public officials or otherwise.
Charles Coleman, how is any of this legal? It sounds like a pyramid scheme.
In a lot of ways, it's not, Joy. And I think that the committee, and what we're going to continue to see from the committee, is that they're doing a good job of connecting the dots directly to Trump. What we've seen previously from this administration, and particularly from Donald Trump when he was president, if you look back at the first impeachment hearings, there was this sort of plausible deniability of like, I didn't know that this was that wrong, or I didn't know that this was that bad. They are taking all of that off of the table. And so, like I said, when they're sort of trying to hand over this package of evidence to the DOJ, they're doing so by eliminating so many different excuses that this campaign, that this former president and anyone associated with him might try to offer around sort of not knowing. They are really hammering home this intent. And this was a brilliant sort of piece to unearth with regard to the level of money that stood to be made, because that takes away any question around how intentional this was or was not.
How can it be? I mean, Fox News is culpable too, right, Angela? I mean, the not just them, you know, you've got a whole, as I said, it's a whole ecosphere, but you do have a major network that is named by name in these hearings.
Yes, with good reason. You know, after the election was called by Fox News and other networks, there was actually a couple of days where Fox News did not challenge the results. And then all of a sudden, on a dime, a few days after November 7th, 2020, they then spent the next 2 weeks doing 774, just over that 2 week period, 774 segments about the election being stolen, conspiracy theories about the voting machines switching votes, fake reports about these trucks coming in with ballots, ideas that Joe Biden was paying kickbacks to people. I mean, they took every lie from the right wing fever swamps and they laundered it through their national brand in that 2 week period. The landscape would be very different. And January 6th would have been very different if Fox News did not spend that 2 week period in November 2020 actively and promoting misinformation and flat out lies about the election being stolen and helping incentivize and legitimize, at least for that audience, the right wing.
And by the way, let's not forget an entire documentary produced by their biggest and most popular host lying about January 6th itself. Charles Coleman, Angela Carrasone, thank you both very much. Still ahead, senators hammer out a framework for a new bipartisan gun reform bill. What's in and what's out? And will it actually prevent more mass shootings? Stay with us.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first.
Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
As we gather here today, the next shooter is already plotting his attack, while the federal government pretends it can do nothing to stop it. No matter if you are a gun owner or a Republican or not a Republican, we all agree we must act to stop this.
Over the weekend, thousands of demonstrators took to the streets in hundreds of marches across the country to push lawmakers to take action on gun violence in the wake of recent mass shootings in places like Uvalde, Texas, and Buffalo, New York. Almost fittingly, for a country with an average of a mass shooting a day, there was even a moment of panic at the march in the nation's capital, where a gun scare caused people to momentarily run for safety. And over the weekend, there were 12 more mass shootings across the U.S. However, there is news that this bipartisan group of senators has negotiated a framework of new gun legislation. It includes incentives for states to implement red flag laws, enhances background checks on gun buyers under 21 years old, closes the boyfriend loophole on domestic violence, and provides more funding for mental health services and school safety provisions. What's not in the framework? A ban on semi-automatic weapons or high-capacity magazines, raising the age from 18 to 21 to buy an assault weapon, and universal background checks, all overwhelmingly popular ideas. While this framework already has received the support of the 10 Senate Republicans needed to bypass any filibuster, it should not be surprising that none of them are facing voters this year. In fact, four are retiring. In other words, no Republicans are taking political risks. No political Republicans are doing so to save your kids from gun violence. There has been some positive reaction to the framework from groups like Every Town for Gun Safety, with some calling it a good first step, which suggests that something more is coming, which it probably isn't, unless Democrats were to get 60 reliable Senate votes of their own. Joining me now is Brandon Wolf, press secretary for Equality Florida and a Pulse nightclub shooting survivor in Orlando, which happened 6 years ago yesterday. And I know that anniversary is still raw for you, Brandon. So thank you for being here. And I want to get your take as a survivor of a massacre, the thing we're trying to prevent. What do you make of this framework?
Well, it is a difficult day, but I appreciate you continuing to have this conversation. I think a few things can be true at the same time here. It is true that for the first time in decades, a sizable group of bipartisan U.S. senators have signaled that they might be open to doing something after the mass murder of innocent children. That is true. And it is thanks to advocates and activists who have relentlessly organized in their communities. You heard from David Hogg there, and that they've assured politicians that they're not going anywhere. It's thanks to parents of gun violence victims who bravely bared their souls over and over again for the world to see. It's thanks to survivors like my friends and others who have courageously shared the stories of the worst days of their lives. Those who have been organizing and mobilizing are to thank for the fact that we have a framework to discuss at all. But it's also true that this framework is entirely insufficient and not even close to a finish line. Forgive me if I take the assurances of Republican politicians with a bit of a grain of salt, but I just want to see the receipts. I want to see a bill, and I want to see the yes votes to go along with that bill. And also forgive me, because I am not a Republican member of Congress, which means it's not my job to carry water for their proposals that failed to address a majority of what Americans broadly support. This framework does not solve our Swiss cheese approach to background checks. It doesn't raise the age of purchase to 21. It doesn't implement a national red flag law. If this framework becomes law, don't get me wrong, it will save lives, but it will not solve our crisis. I'm an advocate, which means first and foremost, it's my job to fight for the needs of my community, to fight for policies that will make our lives better and safer. And that's why I'm still here and I'm still fighting for us to do much more than this framework.
Right. I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, it is, as you said, none of the Republicans who are involved in this are taking any risks. And a framework, we've seen frameworks before that never became legislation and that people bailed on when it came down to actually voting. So as you said, we need to see the proof is in the votes. But we've also seen, like, some of the solutions they want are to do with schools, hardening schools, and in some states, giving teachers access to having weapons in schools. We had that just passed in Ohio. But you and I both know that in my former home state and your home state currently of Florida, you just had at a charter school in Parkland, the principal had guns in the Parkland charter school, same town that the Parkland massacre took place, left the guns around And thank God they weren't found by students, but they could have been. And there's no training really involved in the Ohio law. So are we taking this seriously enough legislatively, in your view?
Well, the answer is no. And we've known that for a long time. Congress has, for a very long time, coasted from crisis to crisis. They've sort of waited us out, telling us it's too soon to talk about it, and then proposing sort of absurd solutions to the crisis that aren't going to do anything and probably won't go anywhere, waiting for the news cycle to move on to something else. Arming teachers is a terrible idea. And it's also an experiment that I'm just not interested in testing on young children. We don't know that it would solve any of these crises. We do know that it would make gun manufacturers extremely wealthy by pumping more guns into the system. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that if we continue to double down on this idea that our only answer to the gun violence crisis in this country is to harden our environments, to put more police officers on more street corners, more guns in more hallways and classrooms, then we've resigned ourselves to the fact that gun violence is unavoidable. And that's simply not true. We can solve this crisis. We know what we have to do to get there. We have the tools to do it. We are lacking political willpower.
Indeed, one of the most powerful voices for gun reform in this country, Brandon Wolf. Always appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much, my friend. Really appreciate you.
Thank you. Up next,
cheers. Karine Jean-Pierre joins me in her first live primetime interview since becoming White House press secretary to talk about the January 6th hearings, gun reform, and so much more. Do not miss it. There are so many things going on in this country right now that we need to talk about. Fortunately for us, we have the perfect guest for that. Joining me now in her first cable news interview since taking on her new role, the Biden administration's brand new history-making and amazing press secretary, the great Karine Jean-Pierre. It is so great to see you.
Oh, that's so kind, Joy. Thank you.
We both have different hairstyles. So
I know since the last time we saw each other, this is how it goes.
We got to keep them guessing.
I love it. I love the spring summer dew.
I love yours as well. Let's get into it. So these January 6th hearings took place today, and I'm quite sure the White House was watching. What is the administration's take on what should be done afterwards? Because obviously this is not a legal proceeding. This is really something that's going to perhaps result in ideas for changing the way our system is to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Is there a White House official position on what should be done to stop this happening again?
Well, Joy, let me just first say the president has been very clear about his support for the vital work of this bipartisan select committee on January 6th. He has said over and over again, and we have said, that day was one of the darkest day of our democracy. Our democracy was attacked. Our law enforcement officers were attacked. And so he thinks it's really important to make sure that the American people remembers what happens. And also, I would reiterate what Kevin McCarthy said a few days after that attack, that we cannot sweep this under the rug. As far as what happens next, that is up to the Department of Justice. As you know, Joy, one of the major issues that we saw during the last presidency, as you covered very closely and watched very closely, is how much the Department of Justice was politicized. And that is what we saw from the last president. This is a president, President Biden, has been very clear about making sure that we give back the independence of the Department of Justice. That is one of the reasons he selected Attorney General Merrick Garland, because of his loyalty to the Constitution and to the law. And so that is what is important here. But we leave that to the Department of Justice.
Well, we know that one of the reasons that President Biden said that he ran for president, it was the Charlottesville racist march and attack there, and the violence that broke out there. We've just recently seen in the state of Idaho a group of white nationalists arrested who were preparing to potentially attack a pride march. This is Pride Month around the country. There is still an extreme threat of white nationalism and white nationalist domestic terrorism in the country. Does the administration feel that the Justice Department has been proactive enough, and that enough is being done, including by DOJ and by lawmakers, to protect the country against this threat?
So, Joy, he has complete confidence in Merrick Garland and the work that he's doing at the Department of Justice. Again, it's an independent agency, and we have to leave that to be continue to be independent. And you're right, we have seen an increase of domestic terrorism, white supremacy in this country. It's been reported. We have heard that from the Department of Justice. And when the president, to your point, when the president decided to run, he talked about the soul of the nation. He wrote an article around Charlottesville. And I know we've talked about it many times on your show, AM Joy, which I love and miss, but AM Joy, and that those days afterwards. And we talked about how devastating that was. And he talked about how devastating it was to see what we saw marching in the streets of Charlottesville. So we understand there's still a lot of work to do. We still have a long way to go. He has talked about that. And so he's going to continue to fight the fight. But as it comes to the, it relates to the Department of Justice, they are independent, and we're going to leave it as that. We're not going to do, again, what the last president did by politicizing it.
And I will note that just for our reporting, for our audience, I mean, there is reporting now that a lot of the violent intent is shifting from the MAGA cause and the quote unquote Stop the Steal cause to attacks on LGBT Americans. That's become a fixation. So I know that is something that is of concern around this country. But I want to talk about another concern. And it kind of relates to also what we saw happen in Buffalo, that mass shooting. These anti-woman sort of iterations that we're seeing, not on the just on the violent side, but on the legislative side. Roe versus Wade is about to fall. Let me play for you what Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, had to say about what she would like to see the administration do about that.
It starts with making sure that there's more access to medication abortions.
Okay.
Right now, there are restrictions on the availability of that drug that are not medically necessary, they're politically necessary. Okay, let's get rid of those. Another part that we can make sure is that people who receive Medicaid for their medical care get the full range of services that by law are supposed to be available to them, including choice of provider. And that means enough of these states deciding Planned Parenthood can't operate within their borders. We want the administration to explore what can be done with federal property within the states that are hostile. How about if the federal government looks into the possibility, can they have clinics there?
And I said legislative side, I meant Supreme Court side. Any support inside the White House to do any of the things you just heard?
I don't have anything right now to preview or talk about specifically, as the Senator Warren just laid out, which is someone we truly respect here. And we have worked closely on many issues this past year and a half. Look, this is an issue when it comes to a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to decide which when she can start a family. It is an important issue to this White House, is an important issue to this president, is an important issue to the vice president. And we're taking this very seriously. We all saw the leaked document that came from SCOTUS, and so it's something that we are watching very closely. And the president has, as it relates to women's health care and things that can be done, the president has asked his HHS agency to look at different things that can be done. I can't speak to the specifics of what the senator laid out, but the president believes in codifying Roe v. Wade. He has consistently asked the Congress to act, and he's going to continue to speak to that.
Supreme Court decisions are coming out on not just abortion, but guns, religion, climate change. And we know that the wife of one Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas, was deeply and intimately involved in the insurrection. Does the White House believe that the Supreme Court still has credibility?
So, look, I can't speak to those reportings about the Supreme Court justice and their spouse. That is something that SCOTUS, the Supreme Court justice, has to speak to directly. It's not something that I can speak to from here. What I can say is that the president's going to continue to speak out and speak up as it comes to Roe v. Wade. He's going to continue to speak out as it comes to making sure that we really deal with the public health epidemic as we look at gun violence, which is a a very it's tearing up our communities. It's tearing up our schools. It's tearing up, you know, in a situation that happened with Buffalo, with the grocery store, which is unbelievable, unfathomable to think about when people are doing things that we do every weekend to go to the grocery store. And so these are the things that the president is making a priority. We have to remember one last thing is that the president has taken more executive actions on dealing with gun violence and gun reform than any other president at this time of his presidency. And so that shows you how much he's made this a priority and how serious he is about this.
Well, we will have to have you back. Karine Jean-Pierre,
absolutely.
Congratulations again on the new gig. You're doing a great job. And happy Pride and great to see you. Hopefully I'll see you in person sometime soon. It's great
to see
you.
Thank you, Joy. I appreciate you. Hopefully I see you in person next time.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Okay. Don't go anywhere, everybody. We'll be back right in a moment with my colleagues, Rachel Maddow, Nicole Wallace, Chris Hayes, Lawrence O'Donnell, Ari Melber, for a full team recap of today's dramatic January 6th hearing. Stay with us.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.